Welcome to the D&D 360 podcast. Greetings and salutations. Welcome to the D&D 360 podcast. And for my returning guest, welcome back. D&D 360 is where we talk all about Dungeons & Dragons and its many editions from the past, present, and future, including third-party content and as well as other role-playing games. I'm your host, Terrell Shaw, and I'll be your guide through your journey this session. A new book dropped earlier this week, Fizban's Treasury of Dragons, so we're going to do an overview of it. First, let's talk about the cover. On the cover, we see two dragons circling in the air fighting. One seems to be a red dragon, and the other one is a crystal dragon. And then we'll see on the cover, on the sort of the back cover art, which is the continuation of the whole picture, is a wizard holding up a staff, shielding two other innocent people on the ground. Interesting cover. It's very well made. The overview that I'm doing is on the regular standard cover of the book. There is an alternate cover of the book, which also depicts two dragons fighting. And they are I believe it is also another crystal and red dragon. But it's more colorful, more vivid. I don't have that alternate cover book to accurately describe it, but I am going to be getting it soon. All right, so let's dig in here. Let's read about the disclaimer. Now, as some of you know, who have most, if not all, of the Wizard of the Coast books, they include a disclaimer on the credit page. Usually they're kind of whimsical and they talk about sort of like a meta joke or something like that. But let's read the disclaimer here for this one. No guarantee is made that the book was or was not removed from the hoard of a dragon. Be aware that items taken from a dragon's hoard might carry traces of the dragon's inherent magic even long after they are removed from said hoard. Exposure to another dragon's hoard can reawaken the magic with unpredictable results. Pretty cool. So, who was Fizban? Fizban the Fabulous was a doddering archmage, an unlikely hero during the War of the Lance era in the Dragonlance D&D setting on the planet of Kryn. So, let's rent this 224-page book and look at the table of contents and see what it has in store. In the beginning, there is an elegy of the first world. It is a very sweet poem that kind of illustrates maybe this idea of Bahamut and Tiamat creating this primary first world. Think of Earth 1. And from there, all other material plane worlds came from it. Interesting read. Then we start off with Chapter 1, Character Creation. Chapter 1 introduces the draconic theme options for adventurers, including three variant dragonborn races, two dragon-oriented subclasses, which are the Drake Warden Warrior Ranger, and the Way of the Ascendant Dragon Monk, feats and role-playing suggestions that can connect characters of any class to a draconic theme. Chapter 2 talks about dragon magic. That discusses magic related to dragons, including new spells, magic items, and draconic gifts, supernatural gifts explicitly connected to dragons' power. Chapter 2 is 10 pages long. Chapter 3, Dragons in Play, presents tips, advice, and tables to help dungeon masters build encounters, adventures, and whole campaigns around dragons. chapter 3 comes out to about 30 pages for DMs. Pretty nifty. Chapter 4, Lairs and Hordes. That discusses dragon lairs and hordes, examining what a lair means to a dragon, and exploring the correlation between a dragon's magical might and the value of the dragon's hoard. It also provides an alternative method for randomly creating a dragon's hoard. This one's pretty okay length. It comes out to be approximately 10 pages. Then, chapter 5. Chapter 5 is titled The Draconomicon. The Draconomicon provides extensive resources related to each of 20 different draconic creatures. For each kind of dragon, this chapter provides inspiration to help DMs craft dragon personalities and dragon-themed adventures, including sample lair maps. Chapter 5 is the brunt of the book, which includes 82 pages. Nice. What it basically does is it brings the sections of chapter 2, 3, and 4 all together and describes 20 different kinds of dragons. Now, I can't wait to read that. Then we round up to chapter 6, which is the bestiary. This includes stat blocks and lore for various new dragons and dragon-oriented creatures, the family of gem dragons, aspects of the dragon gods, dragon minions, and more can be found all into this section. That page is also a whopping 70 pages, pretty big. The last page, however, is sort of like a creature list, and it's divided by CR and type of the book, but there is no index on the back of the book, unfortunately. So let's jump right in it. Chapter 1, character creation. There are sections in chapter 1 which covers the draconic races. It presents variant dragonborn races and options that give characters a draconic heritage strongly linked to the three great dragon families, which is the chromatic, metallic, and gem dragons. Then you have subclass options, which allows monk and the ranger characters to explore deeper ties with their dragon kind. Then there's Heroes of the Dragon, which includes inspiration for the characters of any class to portray their training or magic as derived from a connection to dragons. And then there are the Draconic Feats. These feats are to forge connections to the Chromatic, Gem, and the Metallic dragon families. So, starting with the Chromatic Dragonborn, you see with the Dragonborns from this section, their ancestry claim the raw elemental power of chromatic dragons. These are the vibrant colors of black, blue, green, red, and white dragons. Some of the chromatic dragonborn traits include a chromatic warding. Starting at 5th level, as an action, you can channel your draconic energy to protect yourself. For 1 minute, you can become immune to the damage type associated with your chromatic ancestry. So that means if you were black dragonborn with your chromatic ancestry, you'll be immune for 1 minute from acid damage. Or if you were blue, lightning. If you were green, poison damage. And if you were red, fire. And white, cold. Now the gem dragonborns are introduced in this book, which is a very long-awaited entry into 5e. The gem dragonborns' heritage are of the gem dragons who claim the heirs of Sardiar, the ruby dragon, who is claimed to be their progenitor. The colors and mysteries of power of gem dragons include the amethyst, crystal, emerald, sapphire, and topaz. Theirs are the wonders of the mind, the force of will, the brilliant light of insight, and the resounding echo of discovery. Some of the gem dragonborn traits include psionic mind. You can send telepathic messages to any creature you can see within 30 feet of you. That is pretty good, since you don't need to share a language with the creature for it to understand your messages, but it must be able to understand at least one language to comprehend them. Another bonus is Gem Flight. Starting at 5th level, you can use a bonus action to manifest spectral wings on your body. These wings last for 1 minute, And for that duration, your flying speed is equal to your walking speed, and you can hover. Once you use this trait, however, you can't do so until you finish a long rest. Some of the different damage types for the gym dragons include Amethyst, which deals force damage, Crystal, which deals radiant damage, Emerald, which deals psychic damage, Sapphire, which deals thunder damage, and Topaz, which deals necrotic damage. Now, the Metallic Dragonborn's ancestry lay claim to the metallic dragons of Brass, Bronze, Copper, Gold, and Silver, whose hues glint within their scales. With the Metallic Dragonborn traits, they have Metallic Breath Weapon. At 5th level, you gain a second Breath Weapon. When you take the attack action on your turn, you can replace one of your attacks with an exhalation of a 15-foot cone. This also includes a Draconic Resistance. They also get an Innervating Breath. Each creature in the cone must succeed a Constitution saving throw or become incapacitated until the start of your next turn. That is powerful. You also have a Repulsion Breath. Each creature that's caught in that cone must succeed on a Strength saving throw or be pushed 20 feet away from you and be knocked prone. Some of the damage types of the Metallic ancestry include the Brass Dragon, which has Fire damage type, the Bronze Dragon, which is lightning, the copper, acid, gold, fire, and silver, cold. So, coming to the subclass options, we have for the monk, the Way of the Ascended Dragon, and for the ranger, the Drake Warden. So, for the monk, Way of the Ascended Dragon, monks who follow this tradition augment their powers in battle, bolster their allies, and can even soar through the air on draconic wings. So, starting at 3rd level, you get two features: Draconic Disciple and Breath of the Dragon. The Draconic Disciple includes Draconic Presence, Draconic Strike, and Tongue of Dragons. For Breath of the Dragon, you get to basically take your destructive energy that you have, and when you make an attack action on your turn, you can replace one of the attacks with the exhalation of draconic energy, either in a 20-foot cone or a 30-foot line. Your choice. At 6th level, you get another feature, Wings Unfurled. This is when you use your Step of the Wind, you can unfurl spectral draconic wings from your back that vanish at the end of your turn. While these wings exist, you have a flying speed equal to your walking speed. At 11th level, you get another feature, Aspect of the Worm. Now, this includes Frightful Presence and Resistance. Frightful Presence is when you create an aura as a bonus action and on subsequent turns to choose a creature within your aura to be the target, and we have to do a Wisdom saving throw against your key save DC or be frightened of you for 1 minute. Resistance is that you can choose a damage type when you activate this aura, either acid, cold, fire, or lightning, or poison, and you and your allies within that aura have resistance to that damage. At 17th level, you get Ascended Aspect. Now, this is when your draconic spirit reaches its peak. You gain the following benefits: Augment Breath, Blind Sight, and Explosive Fury. Augment Breath is when you use a draconic breath weapon, you can spend one key point to augment the shape and its power. So basically, you can either have it do a 60-foot cone or a 90-foot line that is 5 feet wide. Each creature in that area takes damage equal to the four rolls of your martial arts die on a failed save, or half as much damage as a successful one. Blindsight, you have blindsight out to 10 feet, and within that range, you effectively can see anything that isn't behind total cover. And Explosive Fury, when you activate your Aspect of the Worm, draconic fury explodes from you, choosing any number of creatures you can see in your aura, and each of these creatures must succeed on a dexterity saving throw against your key DC, or take 3d10 acid, cold, fire, lightning, or poison damage. Your choice. Now the ranger, the Drake Warden. Your connection to the natural world takes the form of a draconic spirit, which manifests in the physical form as a drake. Ah, nice. Now you get a small, you get a pet that grows with you. And as you level up, it also levels as well. At third level, you get two features, Draconic Gift and Drake Companion. Draconic Gift, you share with your drake the following benefits. Thaumaturgy, which is you learn the Thaumaturgy cantrip, and Tongue of Dragons, you learn to speak, read, and write Draconic, and one other language of your choice. Drake Companion, as an action, you can magically summon the drake that is bound to you, and it appears in an unoccupied space of your choice within 30 feet of you. It's friendly to you and your companions, and it obeys your commands. There is a stat block for the Drake Companion in the book as well, and when you summon it, you can actually select what damage type it can take listed in the Draconic Essence trait. Seventh level feature, Bond of Fang and Scale. While your drake is summoned, you have the following benefits. Drake Mount, Magic Fang, Resistance. Then an 11th feature, your 11th feature is Drake's Breath. As an action, you can exhale a 30-foot cone of damaging breath and cause your drake to, or cause your drake to exhale it as well. You can choose the damage type, which is acid, cold, fire, lightning, or poison damage. And each creature in that cone must make a dexterity saving throw against your spell DC, making 8d6 damage on a failed save, or half as much damage on a successful one. The damage also increases to 10d6 when you reach 15th level in this class. At 15th level, you get perfected bond. Your bond to your drake reaches its pinnacle, and while the drake is summoned, you get the following benefits. Empowered Bite. Your bite attacks from the drake deals an extra 1d6 damage. A large drake. The drake grows to large size. And when you ride your drake, it is no longer prohibited from using the flying speed of bond drake of bond fang and scale. And Reflective Resistance. When either you or the drake takes damage, while you're within 30 feet of each other, you can use your reaction to give yourself or your drake resistance to that instance of damage. You can use this any number of times equal to your proficiency bonus, and again, you regain all of them on extended uses when you finish a long rest. Finally, rounding up chapter 1, you have the Draconic Feats. Each feat is representing a mastery of the different ancestries. You have Gift of the Chromatic Dragon. This has Chromatic Infusion. As a bonus action, you can touch a simple or martial weapon and infuse it with one of the following damage types, which is acid, cold, fire, lightning, and poison. And for the next minute, your weapon deals an extra 1d4 damage of the chosen type when it hits. You also have Reactive Resistance. And when you take the acid, cold, fire, and lightning or poison damage, you can use your reaction to give yourself resistance to that instance of damage. You can use this reaction any number of times equal to your proficiency bonus and regain all extended uses when you finish a long rest. Gift of the Gem Dragon. This is gives you an ability score, which it increases your intelligence, wisdom, or charisma score by 1 to a maximum of 20. You also get Telekinetic Reprisal. When you take damage from a creature that's within 10 feet of you, you can use your reaction to emanate telekinetic energy. The creature that dealt the damage to you must make a strength saving throw. On a failed save, the creature takes 2d8 force damage and is pushed up to 10 feet away from you. On a successful save, the creature takes half as much damage and isn't pushed. And finally, Gift of the Metallic Dragon. This comes with two features, Draconic Healing and Protective Wings. Draconic Healing, you learn the Cure Wound spell. You can cast this spell without expending a spell slot, and once you cast this spell in this way, you can't do so until you finish a long rest. Protective Wings is that you can manifest protective wings that shield you and others. So when you and another creature you can see within 5 feet of you is hit by an attack, You can use your reaction to manifest these spectral wings to block you and your comrade from damage. It gives you a bonus to your target's AC equal to your proficiency bonus and against the attack roll, potentially causing it to miss. You can also use the reaction to a number of times equal to your proficiency bonus and regain all expended uses when you finish a long rest. Chapter 2, Dragon Magic. This chapter is in four sections: spells, magic items, horde items, and draconic gifts. I'll give you a sample of the spells that are included. You have 2 second level spells, 1 third level spell, a 4th level spell, 5, 6th, and 7th level spell. Each for different sort of classes. Let's go with it. So, the first 2nd level spell, Narthir's Mischief, is an illusion spell. It is for bard, sorcerer, and wizard. A 2nd level spell, Rhyme's Binding Ice, is evocation spell. It is for the sorcerer, wizard classes. The 3rd level spell, Arshardalon's Stride, is transmutation school of magic, and it is for their artificer, ranger, sorcerer, and wizard. For the 4th level, a 4th level spell is Ralotham's Psychic Lance. It's an enchantment spell, and it's for the bard, sorcerer, warlock, heir, or wizard. The 5th level spell, Summon Draconic Spirit. It's a conjuration spell, and it's for the druid, sorcerer, and wizard. The 6th level spell, Fizban's Platinum Shield, which is an abjuration school of magic, and it's for the sorcerer and wizard. And for the 7th level spell, Draconic Transformation. It's a transmutation spell, and it's for the druid, sorcerer, and wizard. I will say two of ones that stands out to me that I kind of like, sort of like control and maybe for attack, is the Ralotham's Psychic Lance and Binding Ice. Now for magic items. Magic items were okay. I found them to be not so overwhelming. I'm a DM, so if I was going to try to give out these particular magic items, I think two of the items I would give out that I found more interesting would be the Dragon Wing Bow and the Topaz Annihilator. But let me run down the list of what is in the book. You have the Amethyst Lodestone, which is a fist-sized chunk of amethyst infused with the Amethyst Dragon's ability to bend gravitational forces. With expended charges, you get flight, gravitational thrust, and reverse gravity. Interesting. That is a very rare level item, and it requires attunement. Next is Crystal Blade. It is a weapon. It could be any sword. It's a rare and requires attunement as well. Here, the magic sword blade is fashioned from a horn or spine of a crystal dragon, and when you hit with it with an attack roll, the target takes an extra 1d8 radiant damage, and it has 3 charges. All right. Next is Dragonhide Belt. It's a wondrous item. It comes into 3 different varieties: uncommon, rare, and very rare. It also requires attunement, but by a monk. So it's a monk belt. This belt is made of dragon hide, and while wearing it, a monk, you gain the bonus of saving throw DCs for your Kai features. You gain a bonus to the saving throw DCs of your Kai features. The bonus is determined by the belt's rarity. So if you are wearing this belt, your saving throw DCs can augment by 1, 2, or 3. The next item is a Dragon Lance. This is either a lance or a pike. So think reach weapon. It's a legendary, and it requires attunement. This is a weapon forged from the rare metal with the aid of a powerful artifacts associated with Bahamut. Nice. You gain +3 bonus to attack and damage rolls with this made with this magic weapon. And when you hit a dragon with this weapon, the dragon takes an extra 3d6 force damage. And any dragon of your choice that you can see within 30 feet of you immediately can use its reaction to make a melee attack. Oh, nice. Next, you have a dragon wing bow, one I mentioned earlier. It's any bow. It's rare and it requires attunement. The description are the limb tips of this magic bow are shaped like dragon wings, and the weapon is infused with the essence of chromatic gem or metallic dragon's breath. So when you hit with this bow on an attack roll, the target takes an extra 1d6 damage of the same type of breath infused in the bow, which is acid, cold, fire, force, lightning, necrotic, poison, psychic, radiant, or thunder. However, if you load no ammunition in this weapon, meaning you don't have an arrow or whatever, it produces its own, and it automatically creating one piece of magic ammunition when you pull back the string, and the ammunition created by this bow vanishes the instant after it hits or misses a target. So I kind of like that. It's sort of like an energy bow. If you don't have any ammunition, you run out of arrows, you can still fire, and it creates these arrows, this pure draconic energy going across the field of battle and striking its foe, striking its target. Next, you have an emerald pin. It's an uncommon rarity and wondrous item. The pin is tipped in an emerald nib and requires no ink to write. Okay. You can use the illusory script at will, requiring no material components. All right. So basically you have a free pen with no ink that you can write, maybe even in the sky. A flail of Tiamat. This is a flail, legendary rarity, and it requires attunement. And this is made, this flail is made in the image of Tiamat. It has five jagged heads shaped like the heads of the five different chromatic dragons. You gain a +3 bonus to attack and damage rolls. And when you hit a target with this flail, it takes an extra 5d4 damage of your choice of one of the following damage types, which is acid, cold, fire, lightning, or poison. Nice. Another one is a gold canary figurine of wondrous power. This one is a legendary rarity, and it's a wondrous item. The gold statuette is carved in the likeness of a canary, and it's small enough to fit in a pocket. To use an action to speak a command word and throw the figurine to a point on the ground within 60 feet of you, the figurine becomes a living creature in one or two forms, your choice. It can either be a giant canary form, which becomes a giant canary, or a gold dragon form. Which is nice. So each one does sort of different things. The giant canary form, for 8 hours can be ridden as a mount. However, the gold dragon form, if you're missing half or more of your hit points, can speak a different command word. The figurine becomes an adult gold dragon for up to 1 hour, and the dragon can't use any legendary actions or lair actions. Whoa, nice. Next up is a platinum scarf. Wondrous item, legendary rarity, requires attunement. This scarf, as an action, you can pull a scale from the scarf and speak a command word. And when you do so, it has these following effects. Breath of life, the scale disappears, and you regain 10d4 hit points. It's either you or a creature you're touching, so you can either heal yourself or heal someone else. Platinum shield for 1 hour or until you dismiss it. The scale becomes a +1 shield. Nice. Radiant hammer for 1 hour or until you dismiss it. The scale becomes a magic light hammer, which you and another creature can use. The weapon deals 2d4 radiant damage instead of bludgeoning damage normal for a light hammer, and it deals an extra 2d4 radiant damage to chromatic dragons. Oh, nice. Now, I'm not giving you word for word the complete magic item descriptions. I'm sort of abbreviating and getting to the most of it. So not to just give everything away while I do this overview. Next up, the Potion of Draconic's Majesty. This is a potion, a legendary potion. This potion looks like liquid gold. And with a single scale from a chromatic gem or metallic dragon suspended in it. So when you drink this potion, it transfers you into an adult dragon of the same kind as the dragon scale it came from. So the DM could change the dragon scale, and you drink it and you become something different. So it's not always the same dragon scale. Good. Cool. Next up is a Ruby Weave Gem. It's a wondrous item, legendary. It requires attunement by a scale caster, so anybody that can use spells. While holding this gem, you can use it as a spellcasting focus. It has 3 charges and regains all charges, expended charges, daily at dawn. And when you cast a spell holding this gem, you can expend up to 3 charges and ignore the spell's material components with gold dust, cost up to 500 gold pieces per expended use. I don't understand. That don't make sense to me. Let me read this again. While holding this gem, you can use it as a spellcasting focus of your spells. The gem has 3 charges and regains all expended charges daily at dawn. When you cast a spell while holding this gem, you can expend up to 3 charges to ignore the spell's materials components with a gold piece cost. Oh, I see. Up to 500 gold pieces per charge expended. Gotcha. So, if you had a spell that needed material components and it had a gold piece component, such as Revivify, which has, I believe, that has a diamond component, but if it had a gold piece component, no spell come to mind at this moment. But let's say it had a spell that needed to cost 500 gold. You can use this gem and have this gem handy and expend a spell, a charge. And it will ignore that 500 gold piece component for your spell for that. And each charge is equal to 500 gold pieces per charge. So let's say if it was 1,000 gold pieces, you have to expend 2 charges from this gem in order to ignore that. Great price saver, I guess, you know. The charges come back when you finish a long rest. You don't actually you get them back. But good, that's cool. Interesting gem. Sapphire Buckler. This is a shield, very rare, and it also requires attunement. This one is a blue shield fashioned from a sapphire's dragon scale, and it's created to aid in rooting out the influence of aberrations. What? Nice. So, while wielding this shield, you have resistance to psychic and thunder damage. And also, when you take damage from creatures that are within 5 feet of you, you can use your reaction to deal 2.2d6 thunder damage to that creature. Nice. Now here's the Topaz Annihilator. This is one that I kind of like. It's a firearm. Firearm. So, if you don't have, firearms, then this isn't for you. But firearm. It's a legendary item and requires attunement. This magic ranged weapon resembles a musket, but in lieu of any ammunition, it holds a glowing yellow scale from a topaz dragon in its heart. Aha, see? So, instead of firing musket rounds, it has a yellow dragon scale from a topaz dragon. It has normal range of 100 feet, long range of 300 feet, and it's two-handed property, and it deals 2.6 necrotic damage on hit. Boom! When the creature is reduced to 0 from this damage of this gun, it reduces the target to dust. Wow. Powerful. That's why it's legendary. Alright. Next up, the Hoard of Magic Items. Now, this one is interesting. This section talks about the ambient magic of hoard magic items. And it has, it gives the hoard items in different states. And it's based off the age of the dragon. So you have, the first state is the slumbering state, which is just the default state of your magic, the magic items that a dragon might hoard, might have in its hoard. Then you have the steering state. That comes when the dragon is of young age. Then next is the wakened state, which comes when the dragon is of adult age. And then you have the ascended state, where you have a dragon of ancient and above. So basically, any hoard item left in the dragon hordes, it's steeped in the dragon's power and it increases it. So as the dragons get older, it charges the hoard items more and more and empower them at higher stakes. Hoard items have quirks. It has a D8 table that you can roll on to see what kind of quirk it might have. And then you have some dragon items descriptions of some dragon items that are in certain states, which is interesting. You have a dragon's wrath weapon. Any weapon rarity varies. It requires attunement, and the rarity is dependent on the dragon state of the dragon horde state that it's in. So with slumbering, it's an uncommon state. Stirring, it's in a rare state. Wakened, it's in a very rare state, and ascendant is a legendary state. You also have a dragon touch focus, which is basically can be attuned by any spellcaster, and it is basically like a focus for your spells for spellcasters. And it has a very rarity as well, from slumbering, stirring, wakened, and ascended. Next up is a dragon vessel. This is a sort of like a potion bottle, I guess, drinking horn, or some kind of container to hold liquid. You have different sort of properties that it has at the different states. You also have a scaled ornament that can be used as a jewelry, cloak, or some kind of wearable accessory that gains properties at the different dragon state, dragon horde state that it is in. And then finally, you have sort of like draconic gifts, and these are sort of like manifestation or character transformation of sort of draconic gifts that's manifesting on the character. You might have draconic marks that might be visible. There's a D4 table for visual manifestation. Then you have different draconic gift rarity, which comes with also the age of the dragon. Uncommon are wormlings. Rare is young, very rare is an adult, and legendary or ancient. So some of these gifts include draconic familiars, draconic rebirth, draconic senses, echo of dragon sight, frightful presence, psionic reach, scale toughness, tongue of the dragon. Finally, these gifts are optional, of course. So I would suggest if you are a draconic character and you want to possibly either receive a gift or maybe hunt for one or whatnot, talk with your dungeon master and see if they would add these variant draconic feats and gifts into your game. So I will begin chapter 3 in the next portion of our podcast. I'll wrap this up with this being part 1. Didn't realize it was getting so long, but we'll finish out the rest of the overview of this really, really great book from Wizards of the Coast. Just came out last week, and so we'll catch up with you next time. Thank you. So, in wrapping up, I want to thank you all for joining me for another adventure. and I look forward to greeting you again soon. I want to send out a special thanks to Michael Gelfie and his music. You can find Michael Gelfie's music on YouTube at Michael Gelfie or at his Patreon over at patreon.com/Michael Gelfie. That's spelled G-H-E-L-F-I. You can also find me on Twitter at DND360. That's DND360. Or send me an email at 360DND@gmail.com. This has been Terrell Shaw for the DND360 podcast, signing off.